Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today James Church. His new book is called The Man with the Baltic Stare. He joins us by telephone from somewhere on the West Coast. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
This series features a fellow named Inspector O. And this is a very unusual series because it's set in North Korea. Not too many people would be willing to even try that because most of us have never been there. How did you come up with the idea?
It's funny. It came to me sort of almost out of the blue. I was on my way to North Korea. I've been many times, but in this instance, I was traveling with some friends who also like to read detective stories, and so we had a whole stack of them. We were reading on the airplane coming over, and so by the time I got to the North Korean consulate to get my visa, I was full of detective stories in my head. Characters running around. We went into the consulate and I sat down. It's a very, very quiet place, and out of nowhere, the thought came to me, the question came to me, has anyone ever written a detective story with a North Korean police detective as the main character? And I pondered that for a few seconds, and I thought, no, I don't think they have. And the next thought came to me was, okay, then why don't you do that? Hmm. So it was just sort of a challenge to myself, because I hadn't written anything really before, nothing like this anyway. And at that point, I just set my mind to trying to figure out how I would do such a thing.
And the result is this series, and the new book, The Man with the Baltic Stare, is the fourth book.
That's right. I never thought I'd write four of them.
Is this the last one?
I had thought it was going to be, and I think I've changed my mind. I think we're going to try for at least a couple more.
Tell us about your protagonist.
Inspector O. Oh, first I'll tell you that Inspector O sort of appeared on the pages of this book almost fully formed, like I had known him for a long time, and he had been waiting patiently all these years to be free and to tell his story. He is, well, in some respects, he's deliberately modeled after the protagonists in the great noir detective stories, by Raymond Chandler. And not really so much Rex Stout. And I did that deliberately because I wanted to have a familiar frame for the readers, a familiar series of characters, but I wanted to put it in this vastly different context and setting. And I wanted to see how it survived. I wanted to see if this model of the detective story, which many people love so much, would survive being put in North Korea. And when I first started with Inspector O, he was very recognizable, really, as an American character. And that wasn't going to work. And the more I wrote and the more he spoke to me, the more he became a North Korean, a little bit different from the North Korean that people normally think about. People assume that North Koreans are robots almost to some extent, that they simply follow instructions from the top. And my own experience has been that that's not really the case. And so Inspector O began more and more to reflect the many North Koreans I've met and worked with over the years. He's very dedicated to what he does. He's not comfortable with everything that's happening around him. He knows quite a bit about the country before it fell under the current government, and therefore he's more Korean than he is a communist, let's say. He's got a very good sense of humor. He's got a very sharp wit, which is very typical of the North Koreans. And that's how he keeps his mental balance in this very complicated, dangerous world that he lives in.
And he likes wood.
He does. He likes wood because it has a calming influence on him, and also because his grandfather worked in wood and taught him, to a large extent, that the natural world has to be integrated into your everyday existence, that it's not really separate from who you are. Mm. And as you learn more about the natural environment, you really begin to see your own place in the universe.
James Church has joined us. His book is The Man with the Baltic Stare. It's the fourth in a series featuring Inspector O. And as the book begins, he's living in retirement on a mountain.
That's right. He is. It's a forced retirement. It's a self-forced retirement. He wanted to get out of... He worked for the Ministry of People's Security, and he finally determined that he couldn't really put up with the circumstances in which he had to operate. And so he has, as Chinese poets, for example, used to do, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, he's gone up to the mountaintop to try to contemplate and live his life away from the society that he doesn't really fit into anymore. And he's pulled out of that retirement and called back into service one more time to solve a very complicated, disturbing mystery that has to do with the transition from the current leadership in North Korea to a successor, and possibly moving towards what looks to be a collapse of the system.
And just since your book has been published, North Korea has been in the news quite a bit, and you must be watching this with some sense of wonder.
I am. It's one of those instances where life follows art to some extent. I actually wrote this more than a year ago, before almost all of this happened, and it wasn't as if I was being a fortune teller. I had a sense that certain things were already in train, and I was, with this book, I was trying to leap ahead and figure out not simply where they would go, but how all of those people who were involved in it would be impacted by events as they unfolded. I must say I'm surprised by some of the things that have happened in the last month or so, and a little bit distressed at the direction that they're moving.
They're posturing and being very aggressive, aren't they?
Well, everybody's posturing and being aggressive, and it's one of those situations where if people aren't careful, they'll find themselves stepping over a line that they didn't realize existed and in free fall.
Mm.
And we all know that when that happens, the situation can get pretty dangerous indeed.
60 years ago, it certainly did.
Yes, it did, although in that case, it was a very deliberate effort to step over the line, I think.
James Church joins us. His book is The Man with the Baltic Stare. I'm sure that some of our listeners are probably puzzled by your references to going to North Korea, because really none of us have any conception of what that is like. We might imagine going to, say, Cuba, but going to North Korea just seems like leaving our world and leaving our society. Do you want to explain why or how this occurred?
Well, for many years, I worked in the intelligence service. I was an intelligence officer, and that gave me plenty of opportunities to visit North Korea and to observe it. And in addition to which, I worked with North Koreans in various capacities for many years as well. I think that it's important to realize that North Korea is very much of this earth, of this civilization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that are there are very much human beings and fit on this great spectrum of human experience. They're not outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you read many of the newspaper accounts, most of the newspaper accounts, they help to reinforce that very image that you painted. And it's certainly understandable that that's how people feel. The North Koreans themselves, to some extent, help to fill out that picture because sometimes the rhetoric they use is rather strange. But in fact, the place is recognizable, not just as human, which isn't a surprise, but it's very Korean. If you've ever been to South Korea, you'll recognize instantly many, many things that you see around you, that you hear, the interactions of people in North Korea. But there is also this tremendous pressure brought about by the political system. And that, to me, is one of the most interesting questions to try to answer, which is how do human beings continue to preserve their humanity under these extraordinarily difficult conditions?
And we should also mention that James Church, the name you write under, is a pseudonym.
That's right, it is. Although I've done it for so long now that I, James Church is me and I am James Church to some extent.
The book is The Man with the Baltic Stare. James Church wrote it. He joins us today on the program. You had me from the title. I love this title because I was intrigued. I thought, now, what is a Baltic stare? And we find out as we read the book, and it reminded me a number of years ago, I visited Lithuania, and I thought about it, and I can remember the way some of the Lithuanian guys would look at me, and I thought, you know, that really was a Baltic stare.
Oh, that's good. That's wonderful.
It wasn't a very friendly look.
No, it is. That's right. I think that it's not intended to be friendly.
How did you come up with that expression?
Actually, since I've started writing, I've started listening in public places very carefully to conversations around me. It's a lot of fun, and you learn a lot about people and, you know, rhythms of speech and stuff. And I heard somebody say that so-and-so had given somebody the Baltic stare. And I said to myself, I don't think I've ever heard that before. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, he must not have said that. He must have said something else. But the phrase stuck with me. I loved the phrase. Then the question was how to use it. And a takeoff on, you know, the man with the golden arm or the man with this. It fit perfectly. So the man with the Baltic stare became the title of this book, and things fell into place after that, finding out what it was, how it was used, just sort of developed out of the story.
In this novel, Inspector O makes a couple of side trips. He actually gets out of North Korea. He goes to Macau and to Prague. And these are a couple of locations that are just full of intrigue, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They ended up being perfect for Inspector O. At first, someone had suggested to me taking him to Macau much earlier, even when I was writing the second book. And my first thought was, no, I can't do that. He's not going to fit in Macau. It won't work. But somehow, after I had finished the third book, I thought about it some more, and it grew on me, the idea. So I went back to Macau, and it was clear to me that Inspector O could operate in that environment. It was perfect for him.
Would it be fair to say that he operates in a wilderness of mirrors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what his life is composed of, is every single day not knowing which reflection is his and which is a reflection of a reflection. And yet he manages to keep his balance through all of this. He never really falls down or ends up following the wrong path because he pretty much knows who he is.
The book is The Man with the Baltic Stare by James Church. Can you give us some insights into the previous books and how you've put them together?
The first book is called A Corpse in the Choreo. And that, well, first of all, since it was the first book and I was discovering Inspector O as I went, I had to do a lot more development of the character in some sense, but also a development of the place. Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea, is as much a character, certainly in the first book, as any person is, because it's important to set the environment in which Oh is operating, and to describe the place in something other than cartoon terms. You know, the Hollywood loves to portray the North Koreans just as the bad guy, and it fits. I can understand why they do it, but it really isn't. It doesn't help people understand really what North Korea is like. And I wanted to make Pyongyang a real place. I didn't want it to be a detailed description, accurate down to the last zigzag of a street. I wanted to get the mood of the place, sort of like a little bit more like an abstract painting. And as I was able to do that, I was able to explain Inspector O's character a little bit more, why he operates and reacts to the world the way he does. It's because of this environment in North Korea. The plots tend to be complicated. Some readers find it distressing that they are so complicated, but the fact is there are facts and clues on almost every page, either in what Oh says or what he doesn't say. And it's the silences frequently that tell a lot of the story. And people have to allow themselves to get into that mood. Once they do, I think they find it fun. In some respects, I think it's more satisfying to piece the story together themselves, exactly as an intelligence analyst has to do. Mm-hmm. Rather than lead directly from point A to point B, you know, in a straight line, that's not how the intelligence world works. That's not how life works in many respects, and that certainly isn't how things work in North Korea. And so it's this finding your way through a maze, and yet ultimately it arriving at a point where not everything is tied up into a neat package, but you get the sense that this is as close as you're going to get to a conclusion.
Our guest is James Church. How did you get into that line of work?
My goodness, that was so long ago, I don't think I remember. I was, I think I was pretty idealistic way, way, way back then. And in those days, it was before a lot of these scandals about intelligence. The intelligence, work in intelligence really was then seemed to be an honorable career. And I'm glad I went into it, although it turned out to be a lot of difficulties and heartaches in over the course of many years.
And how does a man of mystery like yourself, a rather unorthodox novelist, go about getting a book deal?
In the same way everybody else does, collecting rejection notices.
Okay.
Until you finally find an agent that has faith in you, who sees the spark and the possibility, and decides to take a chance. And in this case, I was lucky with the agent that found me. He understood Inspector O almost better than I did. I was really surprised and gratified at how much he knew about the character, having read through the book. And his suggestions were so, so helpful. And he found a publisher who, in the same way, decided to take a chance, decided that this was an interesting idea, and they would, you know, they would back it up and see how far it went. So I do think you got to have a lot of luck in this, and I had it, and I'm grateful for the support I got.
I like this imprint that you're on, Minotaur Books. I only discovered them in the last year or two, and I think that they have some pretty nifty titles on here, and I was, if I hadn't found them, I never would have found your books. So,
is that right?
Yeah, so I was really happy to make that connection.
Good.
The book is The Man with the Baltic Stare, written by James Church. You say you've decided to write another book. Is that in progress?
It's supposed to be. I got off to a good start, and I think about it every day, and I try to do a little bit every day. But life is very busy, and there are a lot of things pressing in. So I'm going to have to figure out a time to just isolate myself and sit down and listen for Inspector O's voice again.
Are you affected or influenced at all by this sudden wave of news coming out of North Korea? Does that influence the way that you're taking your plot?
Good question. I don't think so. I really do try to avoid current events because I don't want to be writing a commentary of things that people are reading in newspapers. If people recognize too much the things that are happening, then their minds, I'm afraid the readers' minds go to, you know, the latest news show that they saw. And they stop thinking about Pyongyang and the life inside that Inspector O is living. And they start thinking about the cliches that they hear or they read in the newspapers. And that's one of the things I need for them to avoid, and they need to avoid if they're going to understand the books and why things unfold the way that they do.
Mm. When I think of North Korea, I've never been there, and I doubt if I ever will go there, but I think of those fabulous staged photographs that their press agency sends out. They're really amazing.
You mean of the what they call the mass games?
That kind of stuff.
They are amazing. There's a wonderful documentary that's been put out by a filmmaker who's a British filmmaker who lives in Hong Kong, and it's about two young girls practicing for these mass games. And it really gives you a feeling for the individuals. When you sit and watch it from afar, you're watching what looks to be an almost inhuman performance. But when you really click the microscope down and you see the individuals working out on the field like that, and then you go back and you see the practice that they all the time in practicing for this they had to put into it, and then the fact that they're teenagers. And like teenagers everywhere are rebellious and don't really want to do this, you get a different picture of this. And some people are actually offended by these mass games. I'm not sure that you need to be offended by them. It's just it's another form of human expression, which is something that we're not used to.
I guess it reminds me a little bit. I had a lot of old magazines that I obtained from a library that was throwing them out, and they were Chinese magazines from the 60s.
Mm.
And it seems like this is that culture that we used to have in China that is sort of disappearing now, that culture with the mass games. And
yeah, I think you're right that there is some of that there. And an individual in North Korea is supposed to be attached to the group and to the collective. And individualism, as we know it and practice it, is considered egoism, which is not viewed as a good thing. So, yeah, the mass games are a good reflection of what they think society should be. And it certainly isn't our view of how individuals should fit in.
Where does Confucianism come in here?
It's still very strong. Believe it or not, the idea of the importance of the family, Confucianism to some extent really does point to this idea of the individual being subsumed in something larger. First of all, it's, you know, in the family, and then the family is in the community, and the community is for the nation. And you know, in a strange way, that's very much what how the North Korean system is organized, with, in fact, something like an emperor at the top who is supposed to look out for everybody. Well, we all know that human beings have have a lot of foibles, and it's very difficult for any one individual always to know the truth.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. Well, this dynasty that's ruling North Korea is certainly fascinating to observe, even from the distance and through all the filters that we have to observe it here in this country. Are you planning on going back there anytime?
I don't have any immediate plans, but I'm always interested in returning and seeing what has changed. And there are a lot of things that change in North Korea. There's a feeling on the outside that it's the land that never changes, and that's not true at all. It's affected by trends in the world and its own internal dynamics. Technology has arrived in North Korea in a big way that's going to have an impact. Cell phones are working their way into society, and we all know how cell phones change our lives. So it's interesting to go back and watch the development and this particular flower unfolding over time.
Well, I'm really looking forward to this next book whenever you get it finished.
Good. I'll be sure to let you know. I've got to figure out a good title for it.
Is it going to be on the same imprint then, Minotaur?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it will, I'm happy to say.
James Church has been our guest today. His book is The Man with the Baltic Stare, an Inspector O novel. It's the fourth book in the series, and he's working on number 5 right now. He joined us by telephone from somewhere on the West Coast, and he's a man of mystery, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate your time.
It's been a delight talking to you. Thanks very much.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Tune in to the program next week when we get a very different perspective of North Korea. 60 years ago, the Korean War was being fought, and a young sergeant in the U.S. Army, Bill Richardson, was taken prisoner by the North Koreans. He served almost 3 years as a prisoner of war, and he lived to tell about it. He's finally written it all down in his book, Valleys of Death, a memoir of the Korean War. Colonel Bill Richardson is now 81 years old, and he'll join us from his home in North Carolina to talk about what it was like 60 years ago to endure the experience of being a prisoner of war in a North Korean prisoner of war camp. That's the Book Nook next week, right here on WYSO. Thanks for listening. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.